Hi there, this is Dan Delta Collins. You're listening to Wandering DMs. Wandering DMs is broadcast live every Sunday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time on twitch.tv/wanderingdms and also youtube.com/wanderingdms. And now, enjoy the show.
Hi everyone, welcome to Wandering DMs. I'm Paul.
And I'm Dan. On today's episode of Wandering DMs, we have the distinct pleasure of having award-winning author, New York Times bestseller many times over, and creator of one of the most famous fantasy characters in history at this point, author R.A. Salvatore. Bob, thanks so much for joining us today.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
We've been really looking forward to this chat in a while. So I've got to get you. So Bob has obviously one of the most storied traditions in both literature and is also a legitimate old school gamer. So we definitely wanted to have him on Wandering DMs to talk about how gaming has fed into his books about Drizzt Do'Urden and the Forgotten Realms and Star Wars and all kinds of stuff like that.
Recently I was on the Nerdarchy live show, and I got asked, how did I meet Joe Manganiello? And I said, oh, well, I was introduced to him by R.A. Salvatore. And he said, way to bury the lead!
I'm glad you said that.
Go for it. Do it.
Game, I mean.
So you guys actually have a regular game together, is that right?
Yes, regular is perhaps an overgenerous word.
Okay.
I'm actually racked with guilt right now for having actually canceled
be.
On us last
you
night.
Should be.
Yeah.
The
yeah,
first sorry. Rule of running a good game is don't forget you have a game and set up a date to go to the drive-in with your wife.
Yeah.
On the
yeah.
Wow.
Ridiculous mistake
yeah,
on my part.
Us.
Yeah. I screwed up.
I was looking
sorry.
Forward to it all day, and blew it out of the
water. We'll definitely play. You know, it just, you know, we've.
My hair is killing me here. I got oh. all my eyes. Oh.
Got a commenter that Bob's audio is a little low, so I'm bringing him up here. Okay. Hopefully that's better.
Most people prefer that.
Awesome.
My family does.
Hopefully that's better, folks. Let me know if it's a problem. Thanks so much for chatting in. I appreciate it. So, we switched our day from Sunday to Saturday, and I just. It's not stuck in my head that it's Saturday. That's my excuse. Anyway, sorry.
Now, I have to say, in my experience, Paul is like one of the most organized, responsible, sticks up. So the fact that you, Bob, have found one single moment when Paul didn't
one
actually
single.
Manage to get it scheduled, that's like the first time that's
one
ever
single.
I've ever seen that in like 10 years. I don't know. I never. Maybe his relationship
with him. No, Dan, we always know when Paul's not prepared because we'll spend the entire night wandering down empty corridors. Or maybe that's just the way he DMs. I don't know.
I thought we were going to be talking with Bob about all his amazing work. And this
no,
is
we're
going to
be talking about you.
Paul.
Shut up.
Well, what? You know, Paul, you're really going to raise your game here. this is actually an intervention is what the idea.
Oh,
we didn't
no.
tell you this.
Guys, come on! All right,
my group still hasn't forgiven Mike Hamburger for bringing him in.
Yeah, that's how it started. Honestly, so we worked together at 38 Studios for a while.
Yep.
And I don't know when Mike started playing with you guys, who's another friend from 38 Studios, but at some point he invited me to the game. And I definitely admit coming to that first session with like excitement and a lot of nerves because I grew up reading Bob's books. I still remember getting the Crystal Shard on Christmas with my mom's inscription on it, wishing me a Merry Christmas. So I was like, oh, like even after 4 years at 38 Studios, I was still a little starry-eyed to be playing with you, Bob. So, but
great.
Immediately put at ease.
He got over it.
So much fun. Yeah, yeah.
He got over it quick.
Yeah,
well, Mike, we didn't even know it, but Mike was actually one of my, he was my neighbor. He was like half a block away from me at the time. We didn't even know each other, except from 38. And we're like, hey, we're neighbors.
So if any of our viewers don't know, 38 Studios was a fairly big video game company for a couple of years. They were in Boston, then they were in Providence, Connecticut, also had Kurt Schilling as one of the executives. Did produce a game called Kingdoms of Amalur: The Reckoning, which I guess is being remastered and rolled out again pretty soon, I guess.
Yeah, very soon. I think in next month, couple of months, actually.
Cool.
Yeah, looks, I feel very conflicted
from what I've seen,
about that.
It looks gorgeous.
Yeah. It'll be nice to see the artwork again, but it'll, it was 38 was a great place to work. I was there for 4 years, and I say for 3 years and 11 months, it was the best job I ever had. And then it fell to pieces, unfortunately.
Yeah.
In my experience, the video game industry tends to be very swingy. It tends to have really high highs and low lows. And Bob, I know that you've worked with a number of video games company at this point. Has that been your experience? That it tends to be swingy like that, or
no? Almost every experience I've had is because I'm not really working for the company, right? I'm consulting for a very short amount of time. But I worked with Atari did the Forgotten Realms Demonstone game. I worked with them.
Yeah.
I worked with Cryptic, did the quest line for them for the Neverwinter game, and I worked with I'm working with Took now for the Dark Alliance game that's coming out. That features the Companions of the Hall, my characters. The only time I really worked with a company on a long-term basis was 38 Studios. I was one of the Chatham members. I was supposed to be a partner. The first couple of years were magical. And it started, then things started going south around about 3.5 years in, just a little bit. And they moved to Rhode Island, to Providence. And I was really not that involved then. And, the ending wasn't good. I think it's a volatile, tough business.
But
working there, the team we had assembled there was going into Maynard, with the original offices were twice a week, really broke up my week in a very positive way. So many good people there. So many really good people. It's like not only are Mike and Paul in my D&D group, but, half the team at Blizzard now, people I met at 38 Studios, I think. And I talk to them all the time and I see them all the time. And when I go out to Wizards of the Coast out in Seattle, there's a whole bunch of people out there I know from 38 Studios. And we've all remained friends, really good friends. So, on the whole, very positive experience for me. Because don't forget, I've been working up in my garage for 30 years now, since 1990. So,
not as an outsider, I'll say that. As an outsider, I'll say that like 38 Studios looked like it was really swinging for the fences. Like they were taking kind of big risks, looking for big rewards. And the one time I got to visit and saw their major game under production, it was like super impressive. So it seems like they had lots and lots of good people there.
Well, the problem was they kept moving the fences back. They were swinging for the fences, but every time something new was coming out or rumored to be coming out, they had to keep moving those fences back. And we ran out of time and money.
That's tough.
And I would say that, the thing I always say about 38 Studios is that the silver lining of that experience for me is the amazing network it created, right? When I joined that company, it was like 40 people. When it fell to pieces, it was 400. And now all those people are just scattered all around the world, and I have this amazing network of connections of this really talented people who do have actually a pretty strong bond. Yeah.
I feel the same way, Paul.
Yeah, it's kind of nice.
That's awesome. That.
So got me an invite to R.A. Salvatore's home game, so, didn't suck too much for me. When we first started playing, I think I want to call out, when we first started playing, of course, we weren't playing D&D, we were playing the Demon Wars RPG, which I believe you guys made right after 38, right, Bob?
It was when you guys, when 38 had collapsed, Brian, my oldest son, Brian, moved back home while he was trying to get his feet on the ground and decided to start his own company, basically. And I had this old game system that I had started putting together like 30 years ago. And I found my notes on it. And they were really not good. And Brian's a game designer. And he's a very good game designer, actually. And I gave him my notes and I said, hey, Brian, what do you think of this? You want to make a game out of this? I said, what do you think? And he says, it sucks, but I can fix it. And then so Brian and my other son, Gino, and I did a Kickstarter for that book that Paul's showing you right there, Demon Wars Reformation. I'm really proud of it. I mean, it's raw. It needed some refinement. But for a first product coming out, it was fantastic. And we played it for years. And now we're trying to make it D20 instead of D percentage.
Interesting.
It's a really great game. The thing that jumped out at me was how tightly the team dynamic was integrated into that game, right? Like the combats with a team where everyone was really relying on each other and bouncing off of each other's abilities. I don't think I've seen that in other tabletop RPGs. So
because you have active defense. I mean, that's what does it, right? If you're the offensive fighter, you need to stand near a tank or you're going to get wasted pretty quickly.
Right.
It's a fun game. I mean, I still prefer that one because I love the percentage dice and everything, but we're trying to go to D20 to speed it up because we don't have that much time to play anymore because D20 is faster.
We have a question from one of our viewers. Oh, no, and I've broken it and made the text all over the place again. Oh, this is the last. Did this before. I'll fix this real quick, guys, but maybe Dan, read out the question for us.
I'll just point out that's my name, so that's the widget that had my name.
I'm on it.
So our longtime viewer Ash is asking, is Demon Wars the same setting as the books in your Demon Wars series?
Absolutely. It doesn't have to be because it's a game. You can play it wherever you want to play it, right? But yeah, and in fact, in the game we put together for the Kickstarter, the main class in the game are the monks, but we have four different types of monks and they each have talent trees, so you can build hybrid versions or you can just like become, if you're a disciple of Saint Belfour, you're kind of a tank character that can just stand there and take a beating and dish it out. If you're a Saint Gwendolyn, you kind of control the battlefield by moving around and taking balance from your enemies and giving balance, because balance is the third pool in Demon Wars. Third pool of, like, you know, you have hit points, balance, and focus for the gemstones. If you're a disciple of St. Evelyn, you're very powerful with the gemstones. And then you can either become a healer or a fireball thrower or whatever, you know, an evocation monster, or kind of a combination of both. But you can mix and match across the four trees. And then we had rogues and kind of fighters at the back of the book, but we were going to add knights, all-heart knights, just the two mystics from the southern lands, the Chesuli warriors from Beren, the Alpinadorans, the Powries, the elves. We were going to add all of those in the second Kickstarter, and that Kickstarter really didn't get off the ground, unfortunately. It didn't. About 90% of the way into it, I realized that we would have made enough money to do the product, but I would have had to like go to art sharing places for the art. And I would have had to go to China to get it printed. And I just didn't want to do that because with that book, I got to hire Todd Lockwood and Larry Elmore. And I talked to the widow of Keith Parkinson, who I love. You could probably, that's a Keith Parkinson picture right behind me, by the way.
Oh, great.
It's the cover of one of the Demon Wars books, Mortalis. And so I didn't want to do it and go to like art sharing sites and things like that. It just didn't appeal to me at that time.
That makes sense.
But we're now trying to do that for our game and expanding it and have knights and all the other options for the players.
Great.
But that book right there, the monks all can carry every role in the game, and it's a lot of fun.
That's awesome. I'll just remind our viewers, so I think Demon Wars Reformation at one point was published by Paizo. And you can get it right now on DriveThruRPG in PDF format if you want to get that. So it's available on DriveThruRPG.
It was never published by Paizo. DriveThruRPG wanted asked me if I'd put it up there, so I did.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Actually, for COVID, my wife made the PDF free on RA Salvastore. So you can go there right now and get character sheets in the PDF of the book. At rasalvastore.com.
You can just
download it. It's yours. Take it. Open source. Have fun. We're all in quarantine. Play games.
Nice.
You can also get a novella from the world that I wrote about one of the monks from kind of after the original series concluded. Free. It's there.
Great. Great. That's R.A. Salvatore. Is that what R.A. Salvatore?
Yeah, yeah, it's a bad dad joke. She was going to start a story. I get so many requests from people who want to. Can I get this? Can I send you my books to sign? Because, you know, even if you're doing a bunch of book signings, you can only hit so many places. And I didn't want to do that because I didn't want to be, I don't want to be liable for books that are coming to me in the mail. Plus, if their books are really special to people, like the sign, you know, the copy Dad bought me for Christmas in 1990, and I read with him, and I just lost my dad, and I want you to sign this book. I'd love to sign that book, but I don't want to get lost in the mail.
Yeah.
So Diane said, let's just start a site. And, you know, curiously along those lines, I own the copyright to the term e-signing. True story.
That's fantastic.
My brother got sick in the late 90s, and he couldn't go to work anymore. So we started a company called Seven Swords, and we did the Cursed Tower module for Wizards of the Coast. And we they gave me a license to do some T-shirts and hats for Drifts and stuff. And then I said, you know, we should sell signed books on this internet thing that's going on. And so we called it an e-signing, and then one of the guys in the company copyrighted the term. And the company was only there for a couple of years because when my brother passed, we just dissolved it. But I got everything back, so I own the copyright to the term e-signing. So to any other authors out there or bookstores out there, you are free to use it. I only got the copyright, so nobody – well, we were afraid because remember back in that day, people would buy URLs and then try to sell them to you.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, rasalvatore.com, I got an email from this guy in Pennsylvania said, I own rasalvatore.com. And I'm like, oh, great. He's going to hit me up for $100 or to get my name, right? Yeah, and he said, the only reason I got it is so nobody could blackmail you, and you can have it for free, but come look at this site I made for you. Nice. And I went and looked at the site, and he's a good guy, and it was a really good site. And I just said, keep it. And he does e-signings as well and does really well with them for me.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
Wow.
So
that feels like a throwback.
I copyrighted the term, and I own it. So Diane says, I'm going to set up a store, which is a ton of work, by the way.
Yeah, for sure.
Don't try this at home. but it's been great because we've got a lot of people who like want to give books to their kids for Christmas or something. So I'll write, Merry Christmas, John, R.A. Salvatore. Or Happy Birthday, Fred, Spend It With Dritz, R.A. Salvatore, in the book. It's worked
awesome.
Out really well.
That's awesome.
But when she was going to do it, I said, well, it's got to be R.A. Salvatore, right? Because I'm a dad. I like dad jokes. That's a bad dad joke. And she laughed at me, and then she used it.
That's great. So rasalvatore.com, I've posted the link in the chat for anybody who's watching wants to go check it out. And you can get a free copy of Demon Wars Reformation and signed books, and also possibly pre-order your new book, right, Bob?
Yeah, the signed books and the new book aren't free, but yeah.
Yeah, oh, yeah, yeah, sorry. Sorry if I...
They're just regular price. We don't mark them up for signatures. I figure I'm marring the book. I should charge less, but Diane won't, so. But yes, you can pre-order Relentless there, and it's coming soon. I think it's July 28th it'll be out.
Awesome.
And we will ship right around that date. We can't ship early because of contractual obligations. Mm-hmm.
So Relentless is the third in the most recent Drizzt trilogy, if I'm correct. So I think that some of our viewers have been patiently waiting for that third in that trilogy. So thank you for completing that, Bob.
Oh, it's something I've wanted. I've finally been able to take Drizzt, and more than Drizzt, the Drow, where I've wanted them to be all along, from the very beginning. You know, working with HarperCollins has been great. Wizards has been there every step of the way, supporting me, giving me feedback. And, of course, they approve everything. So it's Forgotten Realms book. It's and I think they have a real impact on what's going on in the realms right now. And, I've been waiting to do this. This feels like the payoff for 30 years of work. Because Drizzt was created on July 11th, 1987. So it's been a long journey.
Wow. I think I was reading an anecdote about how you were forced into coming up with that character and the name kind of on the fly on a phone call. PSR, right? That's amazing. Great.
What happened was I had written a novel called Echoes of the Fourth Magic. And I had sent it around, and one of the places I sent it, because in my writer's market, it said that you could send unsolicited manuscripts to TSR. And they were, of course, getting on the map now because of Margaret Weiss and Tracy Hickman and the Dragonlance books were doing really well.
Yeah.
And so I sent it up there in January of 87, and I was working a full-time job, had two little kids, and very soon after, I had a third kid coming, and I got a phone call, and it was Mary Kirchhoff, the editor, and she wanted to know if I could set the book in the Forgotten Realms. So I said, what are the Forgotten Realms? Because they hadn't announced it. There was no internet. This is a different world. There was no real internet then, unless you were at a college that had a connection to another college, right?
Right. Yep.
Or in the military, I guess. But I didn't know anything about the Forgotten Realms coming out. There were no announcements yet. So they sent me the only they want. We talked about it, and I couldn't set my book there because my book, Echoes of the Fourth Magic, starts in this world and goes to a future Earth. Gotcha. But the realms has nothing to do with this world, so I couldn't do that. So she asked me if I would audition for the second Forgotten Realms book, and I didn't know anything about it. The only thing they sent me, the only printed material they had, was a book called Dark Walker on Moonshade by Doug Niles, which was the first Forgotten Realms book. And if you look in the original copy of that, the map in the original copy, you see these tiny little islands. Those are the Moonshade Isles. And that's it. So I thought they must want me to do a sequel to this, or, you know, if I'm using this place and Doug's characters are kind of in control of the place, they're going to know who my characters are. It's not a big place. So what I first did, my first draft of the outline was supposed to be Wulfgar as the hero, with one of Doug's characters, Darith de Calamshite, introducing him. And then Darith was going to go his own way, and I was going to tell Wulfgar's story. And I sent it in on the audition and with a chapter called Bigrin's Lair, with a bunch of giants, and it was Darith and Wulfgar fighting these giants. And Mary Kirchhoff loved it, and I won the audition, and she said, we don't want you to follow Doug's books. We want you to do your own. And, you know, we leave the Moonshade Isles to Doug. And I said, so you want me in the water? Because there was no other map. And they sent me Ed Greenwood's original maps, which was a stack of, you know, photocopies of Ed Greenwood's original maps, which was a stack of 8.5 by 11 page papers with no legend, no key. And some of them were just like a line with a mountain and a tree. And there was no way to know how they got together. Now, I'm working finance at the time at a high-tech company, and my boss is the controller of this, like, $20 million service operation. He's going to lunch. He says, come on, Bob, we're going to lunch with Dale and Nino. And I'm like, nah, I can't. I'm way behind on my work. As soon as they left, I took off my tie, tied it around my head like a bandana, and I pushed all my furniture into the hall, and I got on the floor with Ed's maps. And I got lost in the maps, and I probably had like three things together. And then I hear this voice from the door. It's like, what are you doing? And I turn around, and it's my boss, Rick, and Dale Bartels, who was like the head of this whole service organization, and Nino Federico, my old buddy Nino. And they're kind of looking at me like, what are you doing? And I told them what I was doing, so they all got in there and helped me make the maps. It was great.
That's fantastic.
So we finally get it, and it's like, I got the maps now, and I'm talking to Mary Kirchhoff, and I'm like, okay, I'll put it here. And she said, well, you can't put it there. My first choice was Tamara, and because the glacier worked beautifully in the Bloodstone Lands. You can't put it there. Doug Niles is doing some modules there, and we're going to kind of leave that for him for now. Okay, I'll go here. Oh, that's Cormier, and that's Ed's place, and we really don't want anyone else there. And I'm like, okay, I'll go here. No, that's Callumport. Troy Denning's doing some stuff in Callumport right now. And so finally, out of frustration, I looked at these original maps, and you see all the mountains in the northwestern corner of the realms, and there's this little line it's like a typo around them. It looks like a beach, right, for the sea of moving ice. I said, is anyone there? She says, no, that's the sea of moving ice. I said, no, no, the little line between them. No, I said, that's Icewind Dale. Leave me alone. And sure, that's Icewind Dale. And so I'm not thinking anything of it. And a couple of weeks go by, and I got to start the book, and I'm working a full-time job, and I don't have much time to get this done. And Mary calls me up, and she says, all right, we got a problem. I have to go to a sales meeting, and I have to sell your books to the sales team. And this is really important, because if I get them excited about it, we're going to sell more books. So, but I can't. And I've got the sample chapter and everything, but you can't use Darith. I said, I don't want to use Darith. I want to come up with my own character. She says, no, but you, I have to go sell this. I have to pitch this, and I need a sidekick for Wolfgar. And I said, all right, I'll call you back. You know, give me a few days. I'll get it back to you early next week, and we'll go run. And meanwhile, I'm a month, you know, I'm coming up on month end, and I'm in finance, and I got to get all these things in order at work. I got piles of paper around me. And she says, no, you don't understand. I got to go to a sales meeting, and I need a sidekick for Wolfgar. And I said, all right, I won't take lunch. It was almost lunchtime on the East Coast. She was in Lake Geneva, so she was an hour behind. I said, I won't take lunch. I'll call you back. Give me a little. She says, no, you don't understand. I'm standing across the hall from the room where everybody's waiting for me because I'm late for a sales meeting. And I need to sell your book, and I need a sidekick for Wolfgar. And so my brain's spinning, and I'm trying to come up with something. And one of my favorite fantasy series is Fritz Leiber's Fafhrd and Grey Mouser, the Lankmar stories. And I love buddy fantasy, and I wanted this to be a buddy fantasy. And that's why I had Wolfgar and Darith, right, Fafhrd and Grey Mouser. I wanted that feeling of these two disparate characters coming together, forging a bond of friendship, and navigating a dangerous world. So I had to replace Darith, and I'm like thinking about it, and I said, all right, wait a minute. How about a drow? This is a long pause. Mary says, drow? And I says, yeah. And now it's starting to spin, you know? I said, a drow. I said, how about a drow ranger? That'll be cool. I'll do a drow ranger. And she's like, a drow ranger. I said, yeah, nobody's ever thought of that. And she says, there's probably a reason for that, Bob. And I said, no. Now I'm really getting into it. And I'm like, no, a drow ranger, and it'll be really cool, and he'll work with Wolfgar, and on and on, and Wolfgar understands him, and he's not bad. And she's going, and so finally she says, okay, I got to get to this meeting. I give up. Since it's just a sidekick character, I'll let you get away with it. What's his name? And off the top of my head, I said, Dritz the Warden of Dairmen the Shesbanon, the ninth house of Menzo Berenzan. She said, what? And I said, I don't know. She said, can you spell it? I said, not a chance. No. She said, what's a Menzo Berenzan? I said, it must be a city. I don't know.
Really? Wow.
And that's how he was born. And it was funny because he was a sidekick character. And then after I got the contract, I started writing the book. And the first scene I was writing, I'd already done that chapter with Biggrin. But the first scene I was writing in the book had Dritz running across the tundra when he got jumped by the Yetis and was rescued by Bruna. And in those couple of pages, I knew. All of a sudden, like, this isn't Wolfgar's book at all. It's this guy's book. Mm-hmm. Because, and I think subconsciously, what I came to understand is there was so much more I could say with him. I now that I look back on it, I think that's what it must have been. That there was so much about him that I got from my own experiences. Just in viewing that character for two pages, he started talking to me. And that's how it happened.
Amazing.
Really weird.
Amazing.
I guess there is magic, right?
I'd read that you needed to they needed you to replace a character in that book, but I didn't know who it was actually. So that's the first time I think I knew exactly who I love.
I still love that character.
Amazing. And I mean, I'd like, obviously I'm a big Libra fan, and I think that, you know, pre D&D, you know, probably Libra books look more like D&D than anything else. So
Libra,
I think that's
books,
like a
Moorcock books. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I agree. And it's amazing because I always credit Tolkien, because I was a math major when I started college, and my sister gave me a copy of The Hobbit and the Lord of the Rings for the Christmas of my freshman year in college, 1977. Okay. And I wasn't a reader at that point because high school had beat the reading out of me. And so I was in my comfort zone was mathematics. And so she gave me these books, and I was mad because I had this car that kept breaking down and I needed money. And then, like, not even 2 months later, we had the great blizzard of 78. If you live in New England and you talk to anyone of a certain age, they'll tell you about the great blizzard of 78 where everything was shut down for a whole week. And so I'm trapped at my mother's house. And I'm 19 years old. I can't go to school. My college is shut for a week. I had nothing to do. No video games. There's nothing. It's 1977. Oh, well, 78. Early 78. And I pulled out those books and I put on... And I remember when I first started those books, it was early morning. I woke up and I was bored out of my mind. So I put on my favorite album, which was Rumors. Fleetwood Mac's Rumors, and the chain started playing, and the sun was coming up, and I opened the book, and I read, you know, in the hole in the ground, there lived a hobbit, and that was it. I fell in love. It reminded me of when I was a kid. I don't know if you can see it, but you see the second bookshelf on the other side of the windows behind me?
I do.
That's all Charlie Brown books. When I was a kid, I had a deal with my mom that I could bag school. As long as I was getting all A's, she'd let me bag some. I was very little, like first grade, second grade. And I would stay home with those first edition Charlie Brown books. And that was like my escape from the world, were books, Wind in the Willows, Watership Down later on, Charlie Brown books. But then at school, it beat the reading out of me, and now Tolkien gave it back to me. So I always credit Tolkien with me becoming a writer, and there's a lot of truth to that. But when I look at the writers who had the most influence on me, it's probably Fritz Leiber and Terry Brooks.
Yep. Fascinating. Fascinating. Huh.
It's been a hell of a journey. Now I get to look back at it all and try and make sense of it. I would have never been able to tell you that like 30 years ago.
I love, I just want to go back to, I love this image of you with a bunch of finance guys sprawled out on the ground with maps trying to reassemble, and then from those maps picking a random corner that is Icewind Dale, you know, and then cut to today where just days ago at D&D Live they're announcing, you know, the new D&D book, Icewind Dale, right?
And the new computer game takes place in Icewind Dale.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. There you go. Have you?
It's incredible to me. The whole thing is.
Yeah, that's it's kind of funny. I don't know. That's and just so interesting. I think that like that product, right? The Rime of the Frost Maiden is. I remember someone during the announcement saying it focuses a lot on the concepts of, like, isolation and paranoia, you know. And then here we are trapped in our houses. Now I'm thinking of when you were trapped in your house in the blizzard. It's all coming whole circle.
Weird, huh? History rhymes.
Wild.
It's the other thing. What was the first module for 5th edition D&D?
I don't know that. What was it?
Icewind Dale.
I don't know.
Icewind Dale.
There Oh, really? Wow.
So did you draw on any of the Blizzard of 78 when you were envisioning what Icewind Dale must look like?
You know, probably not. But, you know, I mean, I'm old enough to remember when New England was cold and snowy before we ruined the world. I always liked that. You know, and it's not just me. I mean, this is almost a universal thing, right? You look at Peter Jackson's movies, and where are they? They're in the mountains in New Zealand, and you see the big snowy mountains in the background. I mean, you had if you look at the cover of Child of a Mad God, it's snowy mountains, right? I mean, that has a lot to do with kind of the idea of adventure, you know. Yeah, see? It's right there. That has a lot to do with this feeling of kind of this adventure in the wilds, you know, whether it's crossing the Misty Mountains with the hobbits or whatever. And I don't know, I wanted a very, like, remote land because Wolfgar was they're calling them the Reged Nomads now, but at the time they were called the Ulfgar Barbarians. And so Wolfgar was kind of this Norse figure, right? This giant man, you know, the blonde hair and just this giant Norse figure, like walked off the set of Vikings or something. And it just made sense to me to put it there. And but the book really developed organically, which is strange, but that's the truth. When I'm writing books, people like there are pantsers and plotters. I'm like the biggest pantser you've ever met. I don't know what I'm writing on the next page, never mind what the outline is. I only do the outline so they'll send me a check because it's in my contract. I throw it away and start working. The characters tell me where to go. It makes it fun because I don't know what's going to happen on the next page. If I don't know what's going to happen, then it's going to be suspenseful to me. So it makes it more fun for me as a writer to write like that.
That's really fascinating because that brings me to the topic of gaming, right? Because that's how certainly I like to run my D&D games, right? Of sort of, I don't want to know the greater world. I don't want to have some pre-thought out giant plot line. I want to know just enough. I want to be like one step ahead of the players so that during play they can voice to me what they're finding important, and then I can put that in front of them next and go. And you end up in these weird places that you never imagined.
You do, but with our group, you also wind up with people pulling in eight different directions for you.
That's true. So I'm curious, Bob, like how, like if you can compare at all, like sort of writing these novels versus running games, because you've certainly taken more than your fair share of the turn at the helm at our weekly games. What jumps out at you as the major differences between sort of creating?
Well,
these,
the difference
these worlds
is when I'm writing a novel. Yeah. I'm giving you guys to live vicariously through, right? You're walking down the road with Dritz and his friends. You're living the adventure with them. You're one of the companions of the hall, but you're not rolling the dice.
Right.
When you're doing a game, whether it's a computer game or particularly with an RPG, I'm with you. The people writing the story should be the characters, should be the player, the players and their characters. And I feel that way about video games. I feel that way about definitely when I'm running my dungeons, I have a whole bunch. It's almost like, I don't want to call them submodules, but I have ideas for adventures, but I don't have them tied together by theme unless I have to tie them together by theme. If I have to put a treasure map in, I'll put a treasure map in. But if I don't, if the characters have a different way of getting to a place that makes sense for that dungeon, I slip it in. Yep. I let them write their own stories.
I really like that. That's, I often describe myself as a sort of a quilter of a DM, right? I like to have a lot of pieces, and then I, through play, draw them together and try to build something that's greater than the bits. I love that. I love that.
Which is the way I like to play, so that's why we keep you around.
Yeah, great.
Bob, let me ask how you get started. So, like in gaming specifically. So, you know, for me, like my first D&D set was the Holmes Basic set. And then, you know, everything after that. And much, much later, I got the White Box original D&D, and that's actually my kind of favorite, among my favorite game systems these days. What was the first role-playing game system that got you started there?
It was, I think it was 1980. It was circa 1980. So it might have been 79, it might have been 80, it might have been 81. Yeah. But it was when the AD&D, it started getting big. The AD&D books were coming out.
Yeah.
Well, they The Player's Handbook and the Dungeon Master's Guide and the Monster Manual coming out. Okay. And I was at college still. And after I read Tolkien, I wanted every fantasy book I could get my hands on. But again, this is pre-internet days. In my small town, there was a Walden Books and a Pilgrim Books and one other like independent bookstore. And we could get the modules at the gaming. There was a hobby shop that sold some of the stuff. But not then. That was later on, actually, because now back then it was just really there were like two bookstores that I could go to. Yeah. And they had a science fiction section, like one bay. It was like one small bay of science fiction, you know, starting with Asimov and Ben Bover and Clark and all of them. And then down in the bottom corner was Tolkien. And then there was Terry Brooks, Anne McCaffrey, Michael Moorcock. I can't remember the guy who wrote The Master of Five Magics, but I love that book. Fritz Leiber. But there weren't many. And I had read all of them that I knew about. I didn't know about Jack Vance, and I didn't know about, you know, some of the older stuff. Right. And so I had read them all, I thought, and had no way to get others. And it was driving me crazy. So when my brother asked me, my brother was working with some guys – who played D&D with their Boy Scout troops. They were all Boy Scout leaders. And he told me he was going to play D&D. And I'm like, what the hell is D&D? And he told me about it. And I'm like, all right, I'll try it. I got nothing to do Sunday or whenever we were playing. And it was like this massive creative outlet for me. It just, the first game I played in, I ran. And their characters went through Dante's Inferno. And it was a lot of fun. And that was back in the day when you could still scare people by saying it's a mummy, you know? And that was also back in the day when player characters would run away from things they shouldn't fight. I notice now when I'm playing that no matter what I put in there, it's a flock of Tarrasques. They'll charge it.
Yeah.
And then get mad at me when I kill them.
Am I right? Depends on who your players have had their training with, I guess I would say. Some of our players would know to run faster than maybe some new younger players perhaps. But
my group was completely stable for like 10 years, and then we had an influx of people that now Paul's playing with. One of them, Jimmy, and Jimmy Kelly was in that group too. And then, you know, when my brother passed away, his son joined. Well, his son had actually joined a little before. My son's joined. And so the group has kind of had this rollover. But generally speaking, we're all old friends. And we just feel bad about killing each other's characters, I guess. I don't know.
You know, I get that.
I will share that when I joined the group, I don't know, it was very early, maybe 2-3 sessions in. We had a killer session. I think Gino was running at the time. And all but Mike died. We had a near TPK. Yeah. Everyone but Mike. Mike managed to get out somehow alive. And I remember driving home that night, just amped up and going, "Oh, this is the group for me! I found them." All right. Yeah.
And those were the last deaths you've seen in my group. It's
yeah, really? Yeah. Well,
good for Gino, I say.
Oh, Gino's vicious.
I took my hat to him.
He got it because another friend of mine and Paul's, Mike Ledger, ran a campaign once, and Gino died 24 times in like 4 months. It was just one of those things.
That's old school. That's old school. Yeah.
It's from my perspective, as sort of the FNG still. It's really fascinating joining this group that has been around for literally decades playing together. I know its makeup has changed over the years, but it definitely has that feel of a group that's just been doing this together for so long. And it's just really, it's really fantastic, honestly, for me. I've never had a group that lasted more than a couple of years. Kind of like I've never had a job that lasted more than a couple of years. maybe it's me.
It's video games.
Oh, no.
Paul. It's video games.
It's video games. Blame the video game.
If our friend Tommy ever came back, Tommy and I started playing together in 1980. Life circumstances kind of pushed it, you know, kind of changes the group as you go. But it's been pretty consistent for me for years and years and years, which is good because I'm a very private gamer. Like people are saying, you should stream your games. You know, if you want to promote Demon Wars, you should stream your games. And I probably should. I probably should build a little studio up here in my office and stream our games. Except that, this is our pizza night. I want it to be my pizza night.
I bet you could get Paul to run the game. I bet you could get Paul to take Demon Wars and run the game. And then you just sit back as a player. I bet that would be successful. Just pitching it out there.
it does change things though, right? Like having just being aware that there's an audience definitely changes the feel of the game a little bit.
Yeah.
I won't say it's better or worse, but it's definitely a little different.
You know, even having it online is a difference. Like we've been finding that we've had to, like with the stuff that we don't even stream, we've had to reduce the time on it because we all get more tired doing it on the internet than live actually is one thing we were talking about on Friday.
I can see that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's my wife and I were... Sorry, go ahead, Bob.
Oh, go ahead. No, you go ahead.
I was talking to my wife about just Zoom fatigue, which I guess is a thing of like, you know, doing your interactions like this over the internet rather than face-to-face is draining because it just requires so much focus.
Right.
I did a press briefing for Dark Alliance last week, early in the week, for the D&D Live event, and it was now the topic got around to diversity, and I was on it with there were three women, two women of color, me and Peter Brett. And after the press briefing, which I thought went really well, I told HarperCollins, no more. That's it. I'm done. No more Zoom. Except unless it's like one-on-ones for my book specifically. And they were like, why? And I said, because people don't want to hear from a 61-year-old white guy on these things, and I shouldn't be on there, and you've got more important voices. And I feel the same way. It just wears me out. Zoom is tough.
I think that's wise. Yeah, it is. It is. Yeah. You know, let me bring it back. Okay, so I have, before we run out of time, I have like sort of a rules question. I have a classic D&D rules question. So you are responsible, Bob, for one specific rule in D&D, and as far as I can tell, and that is that in first edition D&D, right, the ability to fight with two weapons was specifically a drow ability and not a ranger ability.
Sure.
And then you made Drizzt, and then as of second edition, who was you know, obviously a drow ranger, and was actually, as far as I can tell, is compatible with Gygax's rules in the first edition Unearthed Arcana supplement. He says players can now play a drow. You know, they're mostly evil, but player characters don't have to be. They can be any alignment. They could be a fighter or a cleric or a ranger if you want, and they have the standard drow two-weapon fighting ability. And then as of second edition D&D, they took that away from the drow, but they made it a ranger ability. And ever since, up until this current time, you've got two-weapon fighting as a thing that specifically rangers do. Were you aware that you actually changed what the ranger class is based on your character in from that time forward?
Trouble, aren't you? No, it was I don't know where I got. I was just talking with Sean Reynolds. It's weird. I was just talking with Sean Reynolds on Twitter about this because he thought that I got it because they told me about second edition D&D, and I said no, because I wrote the book in 87. It was 2 years before second edition.
Yeah.
And I don't know where I got the idea. I do know in the Fiend Folio it says that it mentions the drow can have like a short sword and a long dagger, right? And
totally.
Maybe it was Unearthed Arcana. In the original Unearthed Arcana, there's something about drow fighting with two weapons?
Yeah, as soon as Gygax included them in his, you know, GDQ modules, it said that, and then that was just transcribed, copied forward.
See, that's where I got it from. That's where I got it from with the drow, and it was the old modules, which I couldn't find when I was talking to Sean. But I was wondering where I got it from. But I knew, I knew it, I didn't come up with it completely. Okay. You know, So
that was a regular.
Yeah, it was either the modules or Unearthed Arcana where I got it, and then they made it the range. But yeah, it's been weird because when second edition was coming out, I was writing Homeland. You know, the fourth book, but really the first chronologically. And I got a call from Jeff Grubb, who was running the Realms. He was kind of the coordinator for the Forgotten Realms at the time, and he said, "Bob, how are you going to kill Artemis and Treri?" And I said, "What are you talking about?" And I just finished the Halfling's Gem, and Treri had become this very interesting mirror for Dritz Duarden. You know, I liked the two of them looking at each other, because and Treri was who Dritz thought he was going to become if he stayed in Menzel Baron's End. And so I was just beginning to explore the character. And I'm like, I'm not killing Treri. What are you talking about? He says, no, you got to kill Treri. And I'm like, why? He goes, because we're going to second edition, and there are no assassins.
Oh, and I said, I see. Okay.
All right. Oh, and man. He said, no. If you don't kill him, the god Baal or Bane, I guess, was going to suck up all the souls of the assassins to gain power. So we don't want him to die like that. People like him. He's a cool character. We're going to let you do it. And I said, well, I'm writing Homeland, which takes place like 100 years, or at that time, when I first wrote it, was 80 years before the Crystal Shard. So when Treri wasn't even born, I said, wait, am I going to kill his grandparents or his great-grandparents? How do I kill Treri?
I'm not killing Entreri. And we got, all right, well, then we're going to have to do it. And I said, don't you dare. That's my character. And they're like, well, look, we're letting you kill him. How do you want to kill him? I said, don't want to kill him. And we got this big fight. It was a debate. Back and forth for like 20 minutes. And finally I said, I just don't understand why you have to kill Artemis Entreri. And Jeff said, because there are no assassins in second edition D&D. That's the rule. And I said, he's not an assassin. There's a pause, and Jeff says, what do you mean? And he's a fighter thief who takes money to kill people. And Jeff said, we can do that. And then that's a true story.
That's great.
That is great. Now, I will point out. Yeah. Go ahead, Dan.
Oh, it's just because I remember reading the Forgotten Realms comic books around that period. And when second edition came out, that they basically infused that whole plot line into the book, into the comics. And I definitely remember feeling like it seemed a little odd that they were trying so hard to justify mechanics in the literature. I was like, just write a good story. I don't need your explanation about why the mechanics are changing here.
Right. Well, when I said he's a fighter thief who takes money to kill people, it changed the whole dynamic of the conversation immediately, because when you're working in classes and levels and statistics and all that, when that's the way you're seeing the world, it's different than the way you're seeing the world when you're writing a book about a world.
Yep, that makes a lot of sense.
And people would say to me, what are Dritz stats? How the hell do I know?
Ash in the comments is pointing out that what you just said, Bob, is actually in the second edition books, that anybody you call an assassin is a fighter thief who kills for money. So apparently
I have more influence than people know, huh? You know, for years I got letters saying that I had ruined the best monster in D&D by creating the drow.
Weird. That's really weird.
Think about it. In first edition D&D, race of drow, if you wanted to humble a party, because remember, they could have the best magic items and your party wouldn't be able to use them.
Yeah.
At least not for long, right?
Not for long.
And so people were hating me because I ruined the drow, because they weren't monsters anymore. They were people.
Right.
It was pretty cool.
And I know that Sean Reynolds has a specific beef about those magic weapon issues. Have you ever talked to him about that? Because he has a specific grudge against that. I think I've never heard this story. Yeah. I think if you get Sean started on that, he's going to have a long, a really big axe to grind about that. But it's unfair to players. So I think at some point he got burned as a player.
Isn't being unfair to players the best part of being a DM?
I don't follow his argument. I'm with you on that. His argument doesn't hold any salt with me. Yeah. Did you have any drow players in your game before Drizzt?
Never.
Or was that?
Okay. Never. Okay. Never. We still don't. Twice I used the drow.
Yeah.
Once,
okay.
I mean, I used them as enemies. Once I had this group, and it was soon after I became published author and the books were out and everything. And my group was in this, they were battered. And they went into this barn and they heard something upstairs. So they climbed up the loft and they looked and there was a drow. And he was kind of lying down, and my brother creeps back. My brother's character was the Grey Mouser, just going back to Fritz Leiber. Climbs back down, and he's like, there's a drow up there. We gotta go get. So they plan this big ambush. And the drow jumps up, and they see his purple eyes. And he's got these two scimitars. And he's ready to draw. And they're ready to fight. And one of them, I think it was my brother, it might have been one of the other guys in the group, says, wait a minute. Hold it. And he's holding everybody back. And he says, are you Dritz the Warden? And the drow pauses and says, why, yes, I am. Oh, he's a good guy. They put their weapons away, and I keep total party kill right there. Boom. This drow tore them apart. And as the last guy's bleeding out on the ground, he's walking away, and he says, what's a Dritz the Warden? That was my best moment as a DM. Well, my second best.
That was
my second best. My best was when I had a Monty Hall group. And these were the guys from Clinton, Mass. That I was playing with at the time. And they would run dungeons just to give each other great magic items before they brought their characters to our group. So I had them go up this frozen mountain, and there's this ancient, huge white dragon curled up in the last fight of the dungeon. So they take off all their normal gear, and they pick up their white dragon slayers that they all had, and they put on their boots of the north and their rings of warmth and their cloaks of warmth and all the spells on them, and they charged in, and the polymorphed red dragon just fried them. Because I'm like, oh, you're wearing all that equipment to protect you from cold, huh? Yeah, you're -8 on your roll. Eat it.
It's a great bit. Paul recently ran a game where you in a glacier and you go down an ice cave and you're like, oh, red dragon. Hello, not what you expected, with similar awesome results. Yeah, yep. That's a great thing to do.
Yeah. Subverting player expectation is super.
Well, my favorite stories are gaming stories. And it used to be much more prevalent because people weren't playing games online. So I'd go to Gen Con and I'd meet with these guys and we'd go out for a drink after the convention. There was a group from Biloxi, Mississippi that I used to hang with all the time. Cool dudes. And they'd tell me about their games and they were really into it. And the gaming stories are the best stories.
Yeah, I always sort of...
They're unexpected, and it's stuff that you never would have come up with just like a single person. Like what I find is like when I'm gaming, I come up with stuff that's way more fresh and unexpected than if like a whole month sitting at my computer here trying to come up with something.
Because it's like the end of what's that movie that that Grohl did, Sound City. If you ever watch the movie Sound City, Dave Grohl did it. It's about the music board. They had a particular mixer that this one, like, dingy studio with carpets on the walls in Van Nuys had in California. And, you know, Fleetwood Mac did Buckingham Nicks did their work there. That was where Mick Fleetwood heard Lindsey Buckingham and Stevie Nicks, and they were looking for a new guitarist for Fleetwood Mac. But then Fleetwood Mac did their album. And it's the whole history of this board and Sound City. But at the end of it is where it really gets good, because he talks about how one of the things that's being lost in art is the people kind of playing off each other in a room with music. Mm. So you have people sitting at home with their computer mixing all their songs themselves.
Yep. Yeah.
And so at the end of his show, he's got like Paul McCartney comes in, Stevie Nicks comes in, all these stars come walking in, Tom Petty comes in, and they're just playing off each other and riffing, and it's brilliant. And I think when you're at a D&D table, if the group is into it, it's the same thing. It's like being a writer, but when you're sitting and talking with a bunch of other writers about your ideas, and it just lifts you to higher places. And so, yeah, I completely agree with what you just said. And that's why D&D stories are the best stories.
Super well put.
Really well put. And a great sentiment, I think, to end on, because we're just about out of time here. Yeah. I would love to keep sitting here and shooting D&D stories at each other.
Yeah.
But it'll have to wait for another time.
One more thing real quick.
Go for it.
Go look up Ari Salvatore Wubba Wubba.
Yeah.
It's a story I told about our game. Go look that up. I told it. Remember when Mythic was doing Dark Age of Camelot?
Yep.
Game Dark Age. They asked me to come out to their round table because they were going to hire Brian, actually. And I went out to their round table and I told that story, and somebody videotaped it, and it's up on YouTube. And it's R.A. Salvatore Wubba Wubba. It's the best D&D story.
It is
one of the best D&D stories I've ever seen.
Have you ever seen it? Super well delivered.
I have actually. Paul sent it to me in the past, and it's super well delivered by you, and it's one of my favorite things. I relate it to people once in a while myself about what D&D is like. Yeah.
Yep. That's why I play games right there.
Yep, that's why, for sure. That is fantastic. All right, folks, we're going to wrap things up here. Thank you so much, Bob, for joining us. The folks at home who have or watching this after the fact have any follow-up comments or want to know more about Bob's work or Bob's games, definitely leave us a note in the comments and we'll be happy to get back to you, or maybe even you will instigate the topic of a new show down the road.
And I have to say, Relentless, July 28th, rasalvastore.com, and I'm able to join you today because my DM, Paul Siegel, last night forgot we had a game and went out on a drive-in movie theater date with his wife and left us all hanging there. And so I'm not working on my character leveling up or anything today. Instead, I'm talking to you guys. So I just wanted to put that out there about Paul.
For what it's worth, they were showing E.T. And when at the end, my wife and I were asking, what was your favorite part of the movie? And mine said, well, the Dungeons and Dragons.
And that's when you remembered, right?
Goat, all our reviewers, please go to rasalvastore.com. You can pull down a free copy of the Demon Wars role-playing game for free today. You can pre-register for when Relentless comes out and get a signed copy from Bob, and we encourage you to do that. Definitely just support the author is what we're in favor of here. Remember, as always, you can
enjoy
like and
books.
Follow subscribe to us. Yes, please do. Now for Wandering DMs, maybe if this is the first time you're seeing us because of Bob has graced us with his presence, you can like and follow and subscribe to us on YouTube and Twitter and Twitch and Facebook under the name Wandering DMs on all of those sites for more content like this.
Yeah. You can also find audio-only podcast versions of this show on our website at www.wanderingdms.com, as well as a variety of podcast distributors like iTunes and Google Podcast and Spotify. If you are listening to this show on one of those redistribution sites, please take a moment to rate and review us. We really appreciate that.
We definitely do, and I got to give a thank you to our patrons who support this show. If you would like to join them in supporting Wandering DMs, please do visit patreon.com/wanderingdms. Big thanks to Bob. Please go to salvatore.com. There is rasalvatore.com, but rasalvastore.com will take you directly to the role-playing game and pre-order for Relentless and signing. So, Bob, thank you so much for joining us again.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks, Adam.
Remember, we're live. We're so happy we had you. We currently have a bunch of shows. We have a Tuesday show, Thursday 10 Dead Rats, Saturday Wargaming show, and then we'll be back for another talk show with Wandering DMs next Sunday at 1 p.m. So please join us then for another thought-provoking discussion.
We'll see you then.